And welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Buer.
And I am GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns. And we welcome you guys back to this breakdown edition of the Gophers' first loss of the season, a 31-24 loss at home to Maryland. Not a lot of positives we can really take from this, but we will get into some hashtag silver lining things here with my cousin, former Golden Gopher offensive lineman, Mr. Derek Burns. Derek, how are you on what is a gloomy Monday evening? Kind of just sums up the game for Minnesota, don't you think?
Yeah, I think the weather fits the game from Saturday, but I'm doing well tonight, guys. Thanks for having me back.
All right, so let's just get right into it. I think my biggest takeaway from this game is that this rendition of the Gopher football team has a really slim and narrow margin for victory in the Big Ten. Things pretty much have to go right. You can't have a game like this where you have multiple guys that are out, lose the turnover battle, and expect to win ball games. So, Derek, I'll start with you. What are your main takeaways from this Gopher loss?
Well, I think I first want to give a little bit of credit to Maryland. I thought they game planned the Gophers very well. They were well coached, and I was impressed by that. They both sides of the ball, they wanted to take away the Gophers' strength, and they wanted to, get their on the offensive side, wanted to get their guys in space. So I guess just to start a little bit on the Gophers on defense, I think it was a lack of execution. I don't think guys were out of position a whole lot. I know they practiced for the spread concepts, but they weren't able to, a couple things. They weren't able to tackle in space, but perhaps more importantly was they had difficulty maintaining the edge and maintaining leverage on the outside in a lot of these runs. If you watch Maryland, whether it was inside or outside running, many times the Gophers were in position to make a tackle for a loss or a short gain, and Maryland was able to use their speed, break a couple tackles, and turn it in over and over again, turn it into the bigger gain. So that was disappointing and wasn't something they were able to get fixed. And hopefully with more experience, these guys see more spread that they do better with it. You could just see there was some hesitancy and some inexperience on that side of the ball.
Yeah, it was, I think you mentioned here to start off the podcast, but there's just such a razor thin margin for error for Minnesota, especially with Duke McGee out, especially with Antoine Winfield pulling a hammy, no more Zoe Creighton. So you have three of the six starters to start the season are out, which was about worst case scenario that we talked about in the preseason. And you see the secondary really start to struggle. And again, I think Derek also touched on it, that Maryland deserves some credit because their skill position players are very good. Ty Johnson, Lorenzo Harrison, the two running backs were extremely shifty in space. Yes, Minnesota has to wrap up. Yes, I'm as sick of watching back the tape as the rest of you are and watching missed tackle after missed tackle. What should have been second and 13 was second and three because Minnesota couldn't get them to the ground. DJ Moore was as good as we expected, Luke, and I thought that the game plan that Maryland had was very good. I mean, they put Minnesota in unadvantageous situations time after time after time. And again, that's what I think DJ Durkin is in year three at Maryland. So again, Maryland has depth. Maryland's 1-24 was better than Minnesota's 1-24. And spoiler alert, it's not because it's not by any coincidence, because they've had back to back top 30 recruiting classes, and that's how you recruit. That's how you build depth. So I think we should start with the offensive side of the ball. And that's just that I don't know what else to say in terms of Minnesota's running game, because it is extremely frustrating to watch. Again, when you look at back and you look at Minnesota's rushing statistics on the day from their two backs, 30 carries for 74 yards. That is awful. That is terrible because, I mean, you have Rodney Smith and Shannon Brooks, who I think are absolutely in the discussion for top five running backs in the Big Ten, and Minnesota just consistently decides we're going to run inside zone into plus one, plus two in the box, and it is what it is. We're going to get second and seven and third and five, and then we'll try and pass. And I don't know what else we have to say, Derek, because if Connor Rhode is not going to keep, which you've brought up on the podcast that the blocking schemes are saying that he's, shouldn't actually be keeping from time to time, but dear Lord, if Minnesota's not going to mix in jet sweep action until, and I wrote this down here, when I watched the tape back, Minnesota's first jet sweep action, not even a jet sweep, just the action of it, was 6 minutes left in the third quarter. Their first completed bubble screen was with 6:40 left in the game. So if you're not going to use the jet sweep, or at least the action, if you're not going to throw bubble screens, what are you doing to try and attack the edge? Like, yes, you're kind of sneaking out the tight end from time to time, but if Connor Rota's not going to keep and you're not going to even attack the edges, what are you doing in terms of putting Rodney Smith and Shannon Brooks in, you know, situations to succeed? So I don't know, Derek. I mean, you're the former offensive lineman. You know blocking schemes and offensive personnel better than I do. I mean, am I out of line for saying any of this? Because, it, again, I probably got 100 tweets on Saturday about Connor Rota not keeping, about Minnesota not attacking the edges. And again, go for Twitter, go for Nation. I hear you. Again, I'm watching the same thing you are. Minnesota's not attacking the edges. So, Derek, I mean, be – What did you see on tape when you watched it back?
Well, the game plan for Maryland on defense was essentially to dare the Gophers to throw the ball. Looking back at the Gophers offense, I had the Gophers at about 75 or 80% of their runs were against a plus one box. So Maryland had an extra defender, defending the run, than the Gophers could block. And on those runs, those 75-80% where they were plus run, one, I didn't count one that went longer than 4 yards. And it's difficult. Jesus. Sometimes on a plus one box, you can get everybody blocked up. You can put a man on a man, and the undefended blocker is going to make a tackle for 3 yards. And you can't look back and say that anybody missed an assignment, anybody missed a block, anything like that. Now, there wasn't a great push in the middle, frankly, but even if you had, sometimes those plays are going to be 2-3 yard gain. On the other side of it, those 15-20% of the time that the Gophers actually were able to run into a matched up box. And many of those times is when they had a tight end and an H back. So seven blockers, Maryland brought seven defenders. I believe every time they ran against an even box, they had at least 4 yards. So 4 or 5, I know they didn't have break any big ones, but they had 4, 5, 6, 8, 9 yard gains. So any of those that you saw that were healthy gains, almost every single time it was against an even box. So it was Maryland, again, scouting the Gophers, wanting to take away their strength, which is are their running backs. They were happy to commit an extra defender, leave one safety in the middle of the field, play with inside leverage on the outside guys, basically put them on islands and again dare the Gophers to throw. So to your point, Ryan, if you're not going to attack the edges, which is difficult, especially if they're covering the slot receiver and using their outside linebackers and in a zone to basically commit those guys to a run, then you've got to run heavy play action. And I know, I guess as the game went on, they had a little bit more success with that, but a little bit of stubbornness, I think, on Minnesota's part, wanting to continue to try and, you know, grind out some 2-3 yard gains. And I understand they want to control the tempo a bit. They don't want to, get into a passing match with a spread team like Maryland and kind of let things get out of control. I understand that, but there's balance and there's, you know, come a point when Maryland's moving the ball on the other side that you've got to match some scoring and take some shots. So,
well, we watched Maryland's running backs attack the edge all day. You saw DJ Moore come on an end around. I think Ty Johnson also came on an end around. And I think it's just more of concepts. Again, if you're not going to mix in jet sweep and you're not going to mix in bubble screens, which are, again, two constants in a run pass option offense, I mean, you're watching an opposing team consistently attack the edges the entire game. I mean, I guess the question I have for you, and I want to deflect it to you because I've answered it more times than I care to know here in the last 48 hours. How is Minnesota going to get the ball out to the edge? Because, I mean, you mentioned that play action is going to be something that's going to be huge for Minnesota. But, I mean, besides play action, I mean, we need to see something to try and get these running backs in space, trying to get Philip Howard in space, to try and open stuff up down the field for Langan and Johnson. I mean, what kind of solutions do you have for just trying to get the ball outside the hashes?
Yeah. So other than what you've mentioned, you can look at Jet, and as I said before, coaches are hesitant to run that, especially if the defense is bringing up the safety. And if you saw the Gophers often lined up a running back, split out, and then motioned him back into the backfield. And they did that in order to identify whether Maryland had man coverage on that running back, which they did. So you saw a safety walk up with that. So coaches are not, it doesn't mean you can't run Jet, but it's just not an advantageous look for Jet. So they're not going to generally go to that. Bubble, as you mentioned, is difficult when they're covering the slot receiver. If there is no bubble, so to speak. Bubble screen is called that because it's typically where your inside slot receiver who's set back from the line of scrimmage is either trying to be covered by an outside linebacker or they've got a safety or nickel walked off. And so you have that bubble and you attack it. Many times Maryland was covering that slot receiver. Now, in a trips formation, that was not always the case. So that would be a look they might want to go back and see if that was possible. Beyond those two things, you've got to talk about things like a pin and pull, a jet pass, outside sweep action. And
don't get me started on pin and pull right now, because I know that so Derek and I had to vent to Derek Saturday night, and I mentioned, you know, what I saw, and he said, yeah, that's pin and pull. Minnesota had it. They had it. They had Connor Olsen and Garrison Wright pulling from left to right. If Garrison just gets his head across and turns it to his left quicker, he's able to mash down the linebacker coming through. Connor Olsen hits the outside linebacker, and Rodney Smith is gone. Like, he is gone, and finally Minnesota gets a big play in the running game, yet Garrison doesn't get his head around to tackle for loss. I don't know why they didn't come back to it. I talked about that in the GIF rewind today. It was there. The execution was lacking, but schematically, Lord have mercy, run that play again, because Garrison gets your head around and he learns from his mistake. Ronnie's gone.
Well, when you look at when you are trying to manufacture plays, often, or I should say explosive plays, like you're talking about with a pin and pull or whatever it is on the outside, you often can look at like the passing game, right? So let's look at Connor Rota's performance. You know, he was down Demetrius Douglas, who had Philip Howard filling him for him, and Howard actually led the team in targets with 7 targets. I guess, Derek, let's assess Connor Rota's performance. He was 13 for 26 for 229 yards. He had 1 touchdown and 2 interceptions. So, you know, looking at the passing game, you know, what did you see out of the passing game?
Well, on the positive side, what I'll say that I liked is I did like Rota's ability to throw the ball downfield, in the middle of the field, on some of those crossing routes and hit some tight windows. And I really like the receiver and tight end play. If we're going to talk about the passing game, I think that is Ryan, you mentioned silver lining. I definitely think on offense, that's for sure a silver lining. Those guys it's a totally new, as we talked about before, totally new route scheme in the passing game. The route trees and the concepts are almost completely opposite of what they were in the previous regime. And I think I'm encouraged by that to see the way those things, it's difficult to defend. So I like their ability to push the ball downfield at times, down the middle of the field, hit some of those crossing routes. Where I think they struggled a bit in the passing game, and especially, you know, when you evaluate a quarterback, I like to look at pre and post snap reads. So identifying who to throw to, reading a defense. And then the other part of it is like hitting your spots. And I think hitting your spots when Rota was, when he missed badly, but he was able to hit some tight spots, able to thread the needle on a touchdown to Lingen and some other good throws. But he did struggle, I think, a bit on the pre and post snap reads. I think often he's checking his first look and kind of locking on. He missed some opportunities. I know Ryan and I have talked about. And so I think that's an area that they can improve.
With Connor Rota, where do I want to start? I guess let's start on a positive note in terms of, isn't it amazing to watch a wide receiver route tree that's bigger than 3 routes? Like, isn't it just a fantastic concept to, I mean, again, Derek, I mean, you know, as well as I do, watching Minnesota, like, run a wheel route with their running back out of the backfield, clearing out the linebacker and then running a crossing route back underneath, which is going to be wide open. You know, it's just simple things like that we didn't see with the previous regime. And so, I mean, there are many times I was looking back, watching the tape, saying, you know, I like this play. You know, I like the route combinations. I like the scheme. you know, execution may be lacking at times, but at least the passing game, you know, involvement is there. And I think we're also to the point where what random starter on offense is going to be out for an injury that PJ Fleck won't acknowledge during the week? Because against Middle Tennessee, we have Shannon Brooks is randomly out. And yet I know the media asked, you know, is there any Knicks, you know, who's injured and, you know, who's out for the season. And, you know, there was never any mention of Shannon Brooks. And then Demetrius Douglas is now out for the year and we don't even know what the injury is or when he was injured. But, you know, Andy Greeter at the Tuesday press conference last week, you know, asked, you know, coach, who's out for the season? And Fleck says, go name by name on the roster and I'll tell you. Like Fleck, Coach Fleck, it's Melvin Holland who was on kickoff. Like, there's no need to hide him. Zoe Creighton, we all watched his knee buckle. He's out. But when did Demetrius Douglas happen? And again, we didn't even get an update on that. So I don't know. It's frustrating for me as a media member that, you know, you're hiding. Again, there's no need to hide Melvin Holland being out for the season. There's no reason to hide Zoe Creighton being out for the season. Just say that, you know, Demetrius Douglas is, you know, questionable, whatever it is. But anyway, back to Connor Rota. It's just, you look at his day, 50% completion percentage on 13 completions, 229 yards. It's just when he missed, I mean, he missed abysmally. I mean, it was bad. And then, I mean, a couple of throws that stick out to me and Derek, I know we talked about this in the pre-production meeting that, you know, it's two of his three interceptions this year have been in the red zone. Both throws were on him. You know, the first time on that end zone fade to Brandon Lingan, he short-armed it, didn't get any loft on it. It's an easy pick. The second one, it's third down. Tyler Johnson he's not in press man. Okay, there's a DB 7 yards off the line from him, meaning that he's going to be wide open on a slant because that DB is not going to break. He's going to create separation. The one place you cannot throw it is high. You can't throw it high on third down in the red zone on a slant because what happens? Tyler Johnson tries to climb the ladder. He tips it up in the air because he can't get two hands on it. There's the only safety there. He's standing right there to pick it off. You have to throw that waist down. Let him go down to the field. Let him make a play on it. Worst case, Emmett Carpenter comes out for a 40-something yard field goal. Or Tyler Johnson going the other side of the way. I believe it was third down. You know, he hits him with, oh my gosh, I can't even think of the route name off the top of my head right now. You know, I think it's a post corner was what he ran. And so he is running wide open. He turned the DB. All Connor Rota has to do is flip it into the end zone. And Connor Rota actually throws it out of bounds and it hits a security guard in the back. Like, it wasn't even close. But I guess the most frustrating part about it for me, and Derek, you touched on it, was his inability to move off his first read. And I think the biggest example of that is back in the first quarter where I think it's third down. Rodney Smith doesn't have a backer. He doesn't have a player within 10 yards of him. He's standing at the first down line right in front of Connor Rota as a check down, waving his arm saying, hey, I'm wide open. All you have to do is lead me to the center of the field and I'm going to be probably getting another 20 yards. Connor never looks off of Phillip Howard, who's running a crossing route. Connor decides I'm going to make a rolling 40 yard throw into double coverage for an incomplete pass. Like, if you move off your first read who wasn't there, you see this guy wide open. I mean, there were plenty of examples of that on tape, and it's frustrating that he, you know, his inability to move off his first read. So did he make some very good throws on Saturday? Yes. You know, that bullet into Lingan, and when Lingan hit him with a little shimmy shake on that double move, he threaded it right in between the corner and the safety. That was a very good throw. You know, the Eric Carter throw, I mean, there are a couple other throws in the day as well. But again, we're talking about a 50% completion percentage with two interceptions and only a touchdown.
But again, I was going to say, it gets back to that. There's just a very, very, very thin margin of error for this team. And it's even in the passing game for a guy like Connor Rota. You can't make mistakes and expect to be able to bounce back.
No, and I guess, you know, let's not be all doom and gloom, even though that's what it is outside. I mean, your guy, who is Luke's guy now, is Phillip Howard.
Oh, he was my guy before the game.
So Luke's guy, Phillip Howard, actually led the team in targets because I talked about on Twitter before the game, well, Demetrius Douglas is out, and that's 27% of the target share, which means 27% of the passes that Minnesota had thrown. Demetrius Douglas was the intended target. So Phillip Howard stepped up in a big way. And I just think that I mean, this is everything we knew, guys. I mean, yes, it looked pretty when Minnesota didn't have a lot of competition in terms of opposing offenses, but now that the defense is extremely banged up, and we'll get to it here in a second, that Rob Smith's decision to try and help out his secondary meant that Minnesota's front four had to get home, and they never could. But I'm trying to look at Purdue next week, and you look at this running game, and how does this running game get going when, as Derek mentioned, and again, you know, Derek, you know, wants to be known that this isn't the official, but just his observations, but I trust Derek's observations more than most people, that Minnesota running the ball into a box that was plus one or plus two, whatever it was, never got beyond 4 yards. And if Minnesota is going to continue to see that in 80% of the plays, where is your reason for hope with Rodney Smith and Shannon Brooks? Is, I mean, quite honestly, I feel bad for them. I mean, all they have is to run into the back of Connor Olsen and Garrison Wright and Vincent Calhoun time after time after time because their quarterback won't keep. Minnesota doesn't want Connor to keep because Demery isn't available, and they don't want to put in Seth Green. And for people asking me, well, why can't Seth Green go out there and run the read option? Folks, there would be plus two in the box if Seth Green is out there because Seth can't – if you – it's just Seth Green in terms of the passing game, I don't want to see that. I don't want to see that. I think Connor Rhoda is the best option for this team with no Demery. But I think there is a real discussion to be made that if and when Demery Croft is available this season – and the offense continues to sputter as much as they have been in the running game because they have a quarterback who's like a square peg in a round hole in a run pass option. I mean, it's not like this offense is looking fantastic in terms of the running game. So I don't know. Again, I'm usually the guy that people say, you know, I look through the maroon and gold colored glasses, but folks, there's just such a razor thin margin for error. And now that their second leading receiver's out, maybe the most important player on defense is out with Antoine Winfield, with how vital he was to a thin secondary. Duke McGee's not going to be back for Purdue. Zoe Creighton is out. I mean, looking at this matchup next week, it's not going to be pretty. But Luke, do you want to take us actually, I want to ask Derek one more question. Derek, I mean, you being a former offensive lineman, I didn't think that – again, I think the offensive line pass protection continues to be immaculate. I mean – they have only given up one sack in the season, and for the amount of play action that Minnesota does run, Connor Rhoda has forever to throw back there. And when looking at even the two interceptions, or just I would say on at least 23 of the 26 passing attempts for Rhoda, I mean, he had a clean pocket. And I have been very impressed with this offensive line in terms of in the passing game. And it's tough to really get a read of how much of it is on the offensive line in the running game because you mentioned it, Derek, and it's plus one every time for these boys, and they're not really getting a chance.
Yeah, I definitely would agree in the passing game, the pass protection, especially on play action, which is probably your most difficult pass blocking play, has been exceptional. We talked about the route trees. The passing scheme that they're running now is really predicated on allowing – the split receivers, the first receivers to press downfield and push the safeties or the umbrella coverage downfield, and then allow the secondary routes to come underneath, usually in deep crosses, but sometimes it's out. Allow those secondary routes to come in underneath the coverage, and that's where they've had success. But in order to do that, that's a long route tree. You need to have good pass blocking, and I can remember. A few years ago, three, 4 years ago, that the Gophers struggled so mightily in pass blocking, they couldn't throw anything other than a hitch or an out, basically. I mean, they just didn't have any time to get the receivers downfield to throw that. And so that does allow them, I mean, that protection they've had does allow them to run those long routes. And that's where it's just hard to defend that long in a secondary. Guys on double moves and inside outside switch routes, scissor routes, things like that. And so that's been a big credit to their success. You know, in the running game, I would say I think they regressed a bit on the Maryland game. It had a little bit, especially in the interior. I think the tackles did okay. The interior of the offensive line was a little bit of echoes from the Buffalo game, and that it just didn't get a lot of push. I think Maryland was really physical. Again, their game plan, you could tell the way, not only with the numbers, but the way they attack the line of scrimmage, that they were going to stop Minnesota's run. I mean, that was their front seven. That was their mission. And I thought they were more physical, and the Gophers didn't get a big push up the middle. But, you know, so I think they'll go back and, you know, they'll want to get that corrected. And especially on some of those double teams, get more of a push downfield and open things up a little bit. And as we mentioned, play action and mixing and being a little bit more dynamic helps too, and allows those, that front seven on defense to not be so single-minded. And I think that's what they need in order to open things up.
All right, let's talk a little bit of the Gophers defense. You know, Maryland puts up 31 points, by far the most points they've given up all year. And quite frankly, I think it was pretty obvious that this was by far the most athletic team that the Gophers have played to date. And it showed. The two running backs in Ty Johnson and Harrison were both pretty dynamic, really. They were able to move in space particularly well. And I guess, Derek, just starting with you, you've touched on defense a tiny bit when we open, but, you know, you talked about this was just general spread concepts and the execution was lacking. You know, how did the Gophers try to defend Maryland? And I imagine, you know, going to Purdue, this is largely what they're going to try and do again.
Yeah, I think that you're right. At Maryland ran, you know, standard spread concepts, really the kind of the widespread basketball on turf concept of getting their guys the ball in space and forcing the defense to defend the whole field laterally, which is, it just really spreads things out and puts guys on islands and forces you to make open field tackles. And that's where the Gophers struggled. What I think the Gophers wanted to do coming into the game was keep everything in front of them first and foremost. As Ryan touched on, I think it's no secret they've had some depth issues in the secondary with injuries and everything else. So They wanted to make sure they weren't giving up the home run. I think Maryland threw a couple of deep balls. I don't know that they maybe connected on one, but certainly nothing where they were, you know, streaking for a 50 plus yard touchdown. But the downside of that is they gave up a lot of pitch and catch, and that's tough with a spread team like Maryland. If that quarterback is able to connect on some of those quick timing routes, and they have the skilled receivers that they had, you know, they had a lot of catch and run, or a lot of just, you know, they needed 6 yards, they catch 7 yard out. It's frustrating to watch that. You have to just work as hard as you can on that close and that break on the ball. That's what, you know, the Gophers secondary players that went to the NFL, those guys that were top notch all conference players, that's where they excelled, was playing the ball. You know, I think fundamentally, I think these guys know what to do. I think they know where to line up. They know how to play the ball, but it's just that quick twitch to play on the ball once it's released is just, it's not there. They don't have the depth and some of the talent needed to really tighten down the coverage and get there. So they give up a little bit underneath. And lastly, I would just say, in the interior seven, I think they struggled. It was really their first look at, for a lot of these guys, at a spread concept team, which is just totally different than defending a power tackle team, or even a more standard spread scheme where you're running read option and that type of thing, where you're really keeping things between the tackles. These guys they're running sideline to sideline again, having to make quick reads and really turn and sprint. And I think they struggle to adjust to that. I think a lot of that is, if we're going to be glass half full, I think a lot of that was experience. They just hadn't seen that game speed and seen a spread team at game speed before. And they got to learn, and they got to learn fast because they were struggling to keep up.
I think the biggest thing that people haven't comprehended yet is the game plan going into Saturday was Antoine Winfield was going to shadow DJ Moore the entire game. DJ Moore, who ended up with 13 targets for 8 catches, 90 yards, and a score. That was the plan. Winfield was going to shadow their best player, and Minnesota was going to be able to dedicate their linebackers more to helping their front four, because they were, you know, in theory, were going to be able to shut down Moore. Well, Winfield retweaks his hammy, the same one it sounds like the same one from fall camp, which means that this is going to be a multi-week thing. I know that Darren Wolfson tweeted today that they're hoping he can be back for Michigan State. I you know, from my amount of time just following like NFL injuries with hamstrings, I mean, this is usually like a 2-3-4 week deal because you don't want to push it. And this is the same thing that happened with Demaryius Travis and why he was able to get his medical redshirt was he strained his hamstring. You know, he rehabbed it, tried to get back. And then when he went 100%, he strained it again and again and again. And finally they just shut him down. So I hope that Winfield can get back soon. But what happened was Winfield goes out and Rob Smith has a decision to make. He knows he doesn't have Duke McGee. He knows he doesn't have Zoe Creighton. And he just lost his best defensive back in Antoine Winfield. He had the decision to make that, am I going to allocate my linebackers to the front four, or am I going to allocate my linebackers to helping a depleted secondary? He chose the latter, and you saw the ramifications of it, that Minnesota's front four couldn't get home. I mean, I talked about it on the preview that Max Bortenschlager coming into that game had been sacked 20% of the time, extremely small sample size on 35 dropbacks, but he'd taken 7 sacks on 35 dropbacks this season. Maryland's offensive line through 3 games had been giving up sacks at a 17% clip. And Max Bortenschlager throws the ball, I believe, 28 times on Saturday. And I don't even remember Minnesota registering a pressure. And some of it is because Maryland did have the quick hitting passing game, but there were plenty of times as well where Minnesota rushed 4 and they couldn't get home. And it's frustrating because I don't know how that changes when you look at this secondary and where it's at come Purdue. And Derek also mentioned this to me Saturday night, so I want to give him the credit, but he mentioned that Minnesota's secondary play is almost back to year one under Jerry Kill in this respect, that what Rob Smith wants to do is very similar to what Jay Saville did with the amount of talent he had, was play press man with, you know, say this is 2015 with Boddy and Murray on the outside, and then you can create havoc with your front seven. Well, they don't trust Antonio Chenault to play press man. They don't, because Keandre Thomas is on the other side playing press man, but Chenault is just struggling. And then again, they can't hide him because DJ Moore every time was lined up against Chenault. And again, they know that Minnesota plays sides of the field. And so they just put him to Chenault's side and they just targeted him early and often. You saw the one time Chenault did try to play press man, he gets a pass interference where he literally just holds DJ Moore for 10 yards. Bortenschlager decides he's going to throw it in there anyway, because that's what Maryland does, is 4-speed DJ Moore. They get a pass interference. And then for the rest of the game, Chenault is playing off 7 yards, which means DJ Moore on third down can just run a 7-yard out. He can run a slant and there's nothing that really Chenault can do about it. So I just don't know how I can tell anybody a story right now that the recipe is going to look any different next week. Now, can Minnesota execute and look a lot better? Yeah, because they left a lot of tackle for losses out on the field. Again, I touched on it earlier where they seemingly had Johnson or Harrison wrapped up behind the line. And I remember putting in the GIF rewind today on Gopher Illustrated. There was a play where Lorenzo Harrison turned a 7-yard loss into a 9-yard gain, where I counted 5 missed tackles for Minnesota behind the line of scrimmage or near the line of scrimmage. And that's frustrating. So it's a lack of execution, but again, in terms of game plan, I mean, Derek, you know where I stand on this. I just don't think that there's a lot of options for Rob Smith right now, because again, what are you going to do with Chenault? I mean, at this point, Minnesota has to burn the red shirt of Ray Estes, and I'm shocked that they didn't burn it against Maryland, because now you're going to be throwing him into the baptism of fire against Purdue with Jeff Brohm and all the crazy passing concepts that he has. So, I mean, when you look at what Minnesota's game plan was, what it turned into, I mean, what did you think of what options that Rob Smith really had?
Well, yeah, as we've talked about, the pass rush and the coverage in the secondary work in tandem, essentially. Now, the previous regime ran a lot more man coverage all across the field, a lot more cover one, cover zero. This scheme that the Gophers are using on defense does use more dual safety. They like the safeties to be able to roam, have those guys come up on some shorter routes when needed, try and make a play on the ball, get some interceptions. So it is a little bit different. However, I can't say it any better than you explained it, and that is, if you want to blitz and want to put pressure on the quarterback, which maybe if they go back and look at the game film, they say, you know, we really should have pressured this guy more. Well,
You can't because you don't trust your secondary.
So the devil's advocate is, okay, we're going to bring seven guys. Well, you could be giving up a 50-yard home run because he could see pressure, chuck the ball deep, and, you know, in single coverage and have one of their, you know.
The final touchdown for Maryland of the day, whereas Minnesota was in cover zero, and there's no one over the top. Kamal Martin gets caught peeking at something I don't know that he's peeking at. Thomas Barber gets caught peeking inside, and Tyler Johnson has the easiest long run of his career. So, I mean, that's the devil's advocate that you're talking about.
Well, to that point, too, Derek, we've talked about this before. You watch a lot of those, you know, basketball and turf teams. If they do get seven guys rushing them, they have a go on just about every play, and they just throw the go, and they throw a 50-50 ball.
Yeah, exactly. The premise, again, of this type of spread concept is to punish teams that are not defending the whole part of the field. It's different than a Michigan State, an Iowa, or Wisconsin, which is just, we're going to use attrition. We're going to wear you down. We're going to, you know, force you to defend well in the box. And if you don't, we're just going to pound you to death. This is, you know, different in that, yeah, if you're going to bring one more defender than we have blockers, then somebody else is going to be in single coverage and we're going to go right to that guy. So it's you have to pick your poison. And they did choose, you're right, Ryan. They did choose that, hey, we're going to play sound in terms of numbers, but the execution, it was the part that wasn't sound. So they did schematically try and defend the whole field, play, safe. I hate to use the word conservative because it's conventional is maybe a better term. We're going to play conventional against this and we're going to tackle well in space. And that's the part that was lacking. They just didn't execute for the reasons that we talked about.
And when you look at, especially when you look forward to next week, I mean, this is going to be the same secondary. It's going to be the same linebackers, the same defensive linemen. You know what? I don't know that the game plan really changes any differently because, again, what else do you want Rob Smith to do, folks? There's no healthy talent back there right now that's ready. I mean, if you want to, I mean, you can just start burning red shirts and say, hey, we're going to need you in 19 and 20, so might as well, you know, get your experience now. But you knew this going into the season was you're razor thin there, so why not start burning red shirts against Middle Tennessee or Oregon State? I mean, you did see Kendarian Handy Holly burn his red shirt, and I thought from the limited snaps that he took, he looked pretty good. And, again, I hope that he can turn into what Demaryius Travis was because, again, they wear the same number, and they're very physically – you know, they look alike in terms of that. But I guess the other thing is, Derek, you know, Antonio Chenault, again, the guy's giving it all he can. But, I mean, it's clear that through four games, opposing offensive coordinators would want to throw at him at, like, compared to the two corners Minnesota starts, Keandre Thomas, who, by the way, has looked, I guess, looked pretty good because I don't remember Maryland targeting him. They say, we're just going to pick on Chenault the entire game. Like, how does Minnesota try to hide Chenault? Because it's clear that opposing offensive coordinators think he is the weakest link in this Gopher secondary and are just going to keep picking on him early and often.
Well, we talked about the Gophers wanting to use their safeties in the middle of the field and let them roam and kind of read and react a little bit. One thing they might consider is just using a safety to bracket on Chenault's side. So give him some help and let him play a little bit tighter on some of those up routes, use him in a zone and have the safety over there for help. And of course, everything is a give and take. That's going to limit you in other areas of the field. That's going to put other guys on islands and, you know, opposing teams are going to recognize that and come back and attack other parts of the field. So you have to be ready for that. But if it gets to that point, that's what you need to look for. I think you pick and choose. I think your situations, you probably don't do one thing every single play, but if you have a third and five or third and six, maybe that's the time to tighten them down, give them some safety help, let them stop that 7-8 yard out. And you know what, if he gets beat deep, you got a safety over there for help. So that might be something that they look at and situationally giving him a little bit of help on, with the safety or with another defender.
All right, Derek, so just looking at, you know, we've talked a little bit about secondary play in the defensive line. I know you touched a little bit on you know, the front seven. But just can you talk a little bit about linebacker play and what you saw? I mean, primarily this was just Thomas Barber and Jonathan Celestine, but what did you see out of the linebackers?
Yeah, I can tell you it was I'm sure they'll say it was a very frustrating game for them because of the way that, that Maryland took a lot of those inside zones and bounced them out. You could tell by the third and fourth quarter that those, especially the inside linebackers for Minnesota, were their head was spinning because they're trying to get their run fits correctly, but you know they're trying to be stout up the middle, get their run fit, but yet they have to be ready to turn and run to the sideline, you know, if that guy breaks it outside. So I would say it was they struggled. They weren't always sound on some of their run fits, and that's again what that spread scheme does is. They try and make, you know, outside zone or pin and pull. They try and make it look like inside zone. They ran power a couple times, and so it kept those guys. That's what you want to do to the front seven if you're on offense is keep those guys on their toe, on their heels, and not let them oversell something. So I think they struggled with some of the run fits. And, again, that was a game that, that got those guys who I think are more comfortable playing in the box and really – getting downhill that they were a little bit of a fish out of water where you're playing a spread team and now you're having to run all over the place. And not to mention when there's a pass, you've got to turn your shoulders and drop back into your zone as fast as possible. So on the inside, I think it was, you know, those guys were spinning a little bit. On the outside, you know, they struggled again, attacking those edges, the Gophers at the defensive ends or the walk-up linebacker. They struggled a bit when they ran right at them. Maryland had some big tackles. And when it became, you know, man-on-man blocking, especially early in the game, I don't think they were quite ready for that. Now, they adjusted as the game went on. They widened the defensive ends a little bit. They widened the outside linebackers to protect against the bubble and the edge. And from that point, again, and nothing really, things were just bounced outside. So, it was a game I'm sure they'd like to have back, a frustrating game for those guys.
Yeah, it's when you look at the front seven in terms of their run fit, it was just so many missed tackles. And Fleck talked about it afterwards too, and he's right in the fact that Minnesota's got to wrap up, and they didn't wrap up the entire game. And, you know, two guys specifically I think that are going to want an opportunity to change their best are going to be Kamal Martin and Thomas Barber. It seemed like on most of the big chunk plays for Maryland on offense, it was Kamal Martin who was supposed to be there, and he wasn't. Or at least he was the nearest one to the play, and then, you know, he doesn't read and react correctly. Like, you know, Maryland runs right at him, and there is a slot receiver about 6 yards outside of him. Kamal waits for the running back to get to him instead of charging him downfield. And the slot receiver, who is 5 inches shorter and 50 pounds lighter, just gets inside Martin, seals a hole, and it's a 20-yard gain. Or Kamal Martin gets, you know, caught peeking inside on the long touchdown at the end of the game, you know, gets caught looking at, right at the back of Winston Delighty Boudere's helmet, and he's off to the races. So it's, you know, an opportunity for where I think Maryland thought that every time Kamal Martin's on the field that they were going to challenge him in terms of in the running game. And they did that, and it was executed well. So Kamal's going to have a great opportunity to change his best and change that game tape that he put out on Saturday. And then Thomas Barber the same. And, you know, again, this is kind of where statistics don't really tell the true story, because when you look at Thomas Barber, 10 total tackles, a tackle for loss. Now, if you listen to Gopher Twitter, Derek, which I rarely try to do because for a few different reasons, you know, they think that, you know, Cody Polk should have, you know, found the field a little bit more often. Folks, you know, Cody Polk in 2015 was a very good player. And, you know, I thought he was going to have a bigger role coming into this season. But where he lacks and why he isn't seeing the field, amongst other reasons, is the lack of discipline in terms of going into where his run fit is supposed to be. So if you didn't like where Thomas Barber, Kamal Martin were ending up, well, I don't think you would have liked where Cody Polk was going much better. But I do think that we have to talk about Jonathan Celestine, because this guy is playing like a man possessed. He is everywhere. And yes, I know he missed some tackles like the rest of this Gopher defense, but 15 total tackles, 11 solo, and a tackle for loss. I think that Jonathan Celestine is firmly rising up draft boards because he is just everywhere. And again, it's so fun to watch him work into open space, watch him chase down backside, watch him do a whole lot of different things. Derek, what were your thoughts on Celestine on Saturday? And just, I don't think we've talked about him on the breakdown here that, you know, what are your thoughts on Mr. Celestine's play through four games?
Excellent. Yeah. Excellent guy. That's playing like an experienced player. He's able to, you know, he's on with all his reads, his reaction to plays. He's one of those guys we talked about seeing some of that inexperience and guys with their heads spinning. He's seen this before. He's seen these concepts before. He's able to diagnose plays faster, which allows him to give, you know, maximum effort. It's kind of one of those, where would we be, you know, in a game like Saturday without him? Because so many of those plays that were bounced outside or after second or third missed tackle, he's the guy that brings him down. So he played very well. He was a bright spot for the defense on Saturday and this whole year. He's been a nice leader and a guy that those guys, you know, should be emulating. And I'm sure they are when they're going through film that their coaches are pointing out, you know, look at how much quicker he's making his read because he can see, you know, in this formation and this type of motion, okay, he's looking at these two things, the snap comes, he reads those two things and he knows right away where his fit is and he's able to get there fast. So his play was good. And I just wanted to touch on too, the guys in the interior, a frustrating game for them because with this concept, it really, this is where I give credit to the Maryland coaching staff. They, I'm sure, looked at it and said, hey, Minnesota's stout up the middle. Their front seven is a strong point of the defense. They ran and passed away from that group the whole game. You know, Steven Richardson was always fun to watch him on at least several plays, you know, a few plays a game, drive his blocker 4 yards in the backfield, and he did that Saturday. But there's not a lot of opportunities against the basketball and grass teams for those guys to make plays. It's, you know, they're, as you mentioned, when they're rushing on a pass, it's they're rushing four against five, so it's tough. And so many of those plays are going sideline to sideline that those guys are somewhat neutralized. But they did what they could. And, you know, Merrick Jackson he's a guy that I've seen it before. He's at a crossroads and he's close on so many plays and he's not quite there. And it's going to be interesting to watch to see whether he's a guy, because I've seen it go both ways, that he's a guy that's close that never turns the corner. And you kind of remember him as, boy, the guy, he's three quarters of the way on every play. He almost has a tackle for a loss. He almost has a sack. You know, he blows up his blocker on certain plays, but he just doesn't finish. Or he might be one of those guys with the more experience that it finally clicks and he finally gets there. Because if that happens for him, he's a guy that could really have the potential to be disruptive in the middle. So it's going to be interesting to watch and see. I know those guys are coaching him up, and it's better than saying he's a guy. You know, he's in there and he just sort of disappears, and he's there. He's showing up on a lot of plays, but he's just not quite finishing. And it's not an effort thing. I don't mean to position it that way, but he's a step, you know, close. And if he can, you know, go that full, you know, make that next progression, he's a guy that could be a big factor.
All right, so I want to highlight again, you know, that razor thin margin that the Gophers have in winning games, and just cite a couple examples because I guess to me a handful of these plays really kind of flipped the game script for them and how this game kind of unfolded. And I'd like to get your guys' thoughts if you want to add to this. But to me, the plays that I want to highlight are, number one, you know, the red zone interception that we've already talked about that Connor Rota threw, you know, that took points off the board. Then turning around, you know, the missed interception, you know, a play that I think 9 times out of 10 Jacob Huff is going to make, and it just happens, right? Like it's just dropped. It's a hard position to be in sometimes, but you know, that turns into a DJ Moore touchdown, and now the Gophers are down. At that point in the game, they're down. Let me look here. They're down 14-7, right? Again, the other one is the missed Emmett Carpenter field goal. This is a guy that, for the most part, he, you know, in his career has been so solid, and you know, missed there. And then another one, just here to close out the first half, is the 51-yard field goal made by Maryland that puts them up 17-10 going into half. to me, those are just a handful of plays that really just flip that game script. And it just speaks to, you know, if you can just make a couple of those plays, you know, you've got an opportunity as a team, you know, to turn a game where you didn't play very well, but you had an opportunity to win. Any other plays that you guys want to highlight?
I mean, that's the silver lining in all this is, you know, for his, you know, negative air quote that all three of us have been on this podcast with 90 seconds left in the game, Minnesota has the game tied and they played about as bad as I think they could have. And this game was tied with 90 seconds left.
Well, not only that, Ryan, but they're down players, right? They played poorly, but they're down players. You know, they've had some injuries.
Exactly.
But they're still finding ways to be in it against a team. I'd be curious. I think Maryland will do better than we think, even though they're on QB3.
Well, you'll remember exactly. And that was the narrative. Well, Maryland's on their third quarterback. Well, Maryland also has better skill position players than Minnesota. Maryland has more defensive depth than Minnesota does. This isn't excuses. These are facts, folks. And, I mean, you mentioned it with a red zone interception. That takes 3 or 7 points off the board. And McCarpenter misses a field goal. That's, you know, okay. So that's 7. So that's 6 or 10 points. Jacob Huff misses, you know, an easy interception. You know, and then we'll get to special teams here in a bit. But, Minnesota didn't play well in all three facets of it. And, you know, there were too many times on third down where Minnesota didn't get off the field as well. I think Maryland converted 58% of their third downs against Minnesota, where coming into the game, Minnesota was only giving up 26% of their third downs to be converted. So we've talked about it, you know, with the lack of depth that Minnesota has, because they're down so many players right now, especially in the secondary, there's just not a lot that, you know, if they don't play in that 70th percentile or higher, it's going to be tough sledding in the Big Ten. Derek, are there any other plays you want to highlight before we get to special teams?
Well, yeah, not just one, not necessarily. In fact, it was not a gopher error, but I think first half, I believe, 4th and 8, 4th and 10, and you know, the Maryland third string QB that people keep pointing out throws an unbelievable pass to convert for a first down. And that nothing that the Gophers did on that play, but just something where they came up with a play. I mean, that was a situation they needed to come up with a great play, and they did.
Well, the receiver makes a heck of a play on that ball too, right?
Like, yeah.
It's all around. It's a great play by Maryland. You got to give them credit.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's one that they made a, you know, sometimes that happens where you do everything right, but the other team just jumps up and makes a big play. And that was, you know, that I think that play ended up being a big factor. You stop them there and that also changes the game script.
All right. Last thing I want to highlight before we talk special teams. I want to note that I got a text from Mr. Ryan Burns and he told me to mark this date. And that was that a Gopher receiver won a 50-50 ball. And guess what? I've marked the date. And what a play by Tyler Johnson.
I got to actually give credit to Derek because I texted Derek when that happened and he's the one that told me mark this date down. And awesome. I thought I was laughing in the press box. Derek, how excited are you that Minnesota finally won a 50-50 ball considering they're going to have to start throwing about 4 or 5 of those a game?
Yeah, what do you know? You get single coverage on the outside and the safety can't, you know, he's too far to make a play. So you throw the ball up in the air to a guy who's been able to go up and make some good catches, and he comes down with it. And there was nothing the Maryland defender did wrong. It was just a great play, just like we talked about Maryland had on their side of the ball. He went up and made a great play. And it's, again, the defender's back is to the pass, so to the QB. So to me, I've said it too many times. I don't think it's as high risk a play as you know, perhaps others think. And it's something that I would go back to. And so, yeah, it was really nice to see, and a little bit of justice maybe.
All right. So my next question for special teams, just to start off, is it just TCF Bank Stadium or why are so many balls kicked out of bounds on free kicks?
I have no sympathy for special teams on that respect. You are out there before the game. This is your home stadium.
But this is both teams. It wasn't just the Gophers. Like, what is it?
I have no sympathy for either one of them. You know what the wind is going to do. You did it. I mean, you were just out on the field at 10 a.m. You knew you were kicking into this wind. And, I mean, special teams dictate games so many times, especially in close games. And you look at Minnesota's, and they didn't give themselves any favors at all. Santoso kicks two out of bounds. Santoso, I also thought he outkicked his coverage like each one of us have with our significant others. And so, yes, Ryan Santoso has a 51-yard average, but that doesn't mean anything because they, all three punts were returned for an average of 12 yards. So it's a 50-plus yard boot, but it's like a 40 or 39 net punt. So that didn't help. I thought that especially, I mean, that debacle at the end of the game where Maryland pooch kicks it till about the 15 or 20. The upbacks decide that they're not going to get it. So Shannon Brooks has to sprint 30 yards to his left. It goes past him. Minnesota gets it at the four to try to drive 96 yards in 66 seconds instead of, you know, the upback taking it or Shannon Brooks being able to catch up to it. Minnesota starts at the 30, 35. So just not a lot of help from this special teams unit. Emmett Carpenter also misses a field goal. It's just, again, in these, we've talked about how razor thin the margin of error is for Minnesota in the Big Ten. Now, when special teams doesn't help as well, that margin gets even thinner. Did I miss anything, Derek, or do you think I covered it?
No, I would just say that was another case on that kickoff where they had, I feel like they had scouted the Gophers well, and they knew where they had to, hey, if we get in the right situation, we're gonna pop it up and you know, kick a short one into a gap in the receiving kick return, and that guy put it there perfectly. The only shining moment for the special teams was that they stopped the fake field goal
that is worth noting. Yep, you're right.
They were able to react on that. I think the guys up front were a bit caught off guard, but good job by the defenders in back to react to that and stop that short. That was as far as the beginning of the game, that was a nice, would have been a much different game script as we talked about if they had gotten in seven there.
I also think Maryland got lucky on their field goal unit because, Luke, we forgot to touch on this, that Maryland was 2 of 5 field goal kicking this year coming into the game, and they were 1 of 4 from 30-plus. And then at the end of the half, Maryland kicker guy comes in and drills a 52-yarder.
Well,
like,
that was,
come on.
That was just a prayer.
Like, really?
That was a prayer. Like, watching the kick, it was so low. And the fact that he was somehow able to squeeze it over the crossbar, like, I don't even know, you know, warming up if he can hit that normally. Like, he did not overly impress me. The one thing I do want to say is I'm a little worried about Emmett Carpenter. Even on the make, he had such a power fade on that made field goal. I don't know if he's just not getting his cues. It's definitely not something that you play. You know, in golf, you can play a hook a little bit, but in kicking, you don't really play a fade or a hook. And so I don't know if he's just not, something's not working, if it's a timing issue or something's in his head. I'm a little concerned about him now through four games.
Yeah, we'll have to see. So it's, again, we all stressed on it. Just the, you know, Minnesota didn't play well on Saturday. Absolutely. I think we all agree. I mean, were there some positive notes? Absolutely. Yeah. It's just when you look at this team heading forward, spoiler alert, folks, I still think this team can make a bowl. I still think they do make a bowl. And everybody thinking that how does this team, you know, win a game the rest of the season? I mean, everybody, you guys were the same ones thinking we can win 8 or 9 like last week. It's just recency bias. And so I think Minnesota is going to come out with a better game plan, better effort, better execution against Purdue. Again, this is going to be a toss-up game with how well Purdue is playing and where Minnesota's at injury-wise in their secondary. I cannot stress, this is not, I mean, there isn't another team in the Big Ten that would present probably a worse matchup for Minnesota right now than probably Maryland, playing them twice in a row. So just, you know, what Maryland or what Purdue's going to try to do on offense and where Minnesota's at in their secondary and with the lack of pressure they're generating from their front four, we'll have to see. Derek, any parting thoughts before Luke wraps it up?
No, I mean, I would say, For all the – just echo what you said. For all the mistakes that were made and just it was an ugly game for them, I still think if they – even if they don't change the schemes and even if they have to do some of those things on defense we talked about and not, you know, be able to bring a lot of pressure and tighten things down, even if they make, if they do the same thing and make some of those open field tackles and are more sound in their execution, Maryland's, you know, in the mid 20s probably on points. And then you've got to, or maybe in the next case, Purdue, they're in the mid 20s. You got to come up with 28 points to win the game on offense. So it'll be, I think that they'll probably, hopefully, be more dynamic on offense. And they've seen this scheme against them. And so you can bet that the coaches will come back and put some things together, a different package together to try and attack that. So they were close on the day that they really were off in all three phases.
All right. So I want to thank everybody for listening. We will have a preview edition coming out for the Purdue game on Thursday. So keep an eye out for that. Again, thanks for listening. If you like the podcast, you know, subscribe, rate on iTunes. That's appreciated. That helps other people find us. Again, you can tell a friend as well. I think that Ryan and Derek give about as good analysis as you're going to find on Gopher Football anywhere. So again, thanks for listening, and go Gophers.